different provinces. So we wanted to be equipped so that you can be in the position to respond to some of the questions which are going to be raised. And the presentation, I think we have sent you the guidelines that what we are expecting in terms of objectives and challenges and matters relating to service delivery, job creation and poverty alleviation, but etc. As usually, I'll request maybe to start to introduce ourselves and in short so that we familiarize ourselves to each other. I'll start this way, members to introduce themselves and then that way.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I am Zola Mlenzana, member of the Select Committee representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, I'm Priscilla Temba, Mpumalanga, a member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Mbuyisela Jacobs, a member of the committee representing the Free State.
Good morning, my name is Taffy Adler. I'm the CEO of the Housing Development Agency.
Good morning, I am Joseph Leshavani. I am from the Housing Development Agency.
Good morning, my name is Jagan Faghasi. I'm with Rural Housing Loan Fund, CEO.
Good morning, I'm Maurice Ngomezulu. I'm from the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, my name is Reinet Mkiba, also from National Department of Human Settlements.
Mili Lekaba, Office of the Director General, Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sean Solomon, Office of the DG, Department of Human Settlements. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. I am Pumelele Sibisi, the Committee Secretary. Thanks.
I request you at the back to introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Johanna Boyson. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. I'm Nangala Masanyana from Committee Section 5.
Thank you very much. As usual, my name is Pat Sibande, the chairperson of this committee. And then also, I'd like to extend the invitation that TS is available while we starting, then so that maybe particular from people from the entity that you can get something and grab while we continue with our meeting. Baba Groenewald, may you please switch off? Oh my God. Thank you. I think without wasting any time already, I think now it's 9:30. It's 9:30. I'll request, as it is, in our invitation, that we request the Housing Development Agency to start. But you can grab something. Those had a chance. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present to you on these very important areas. The Housing Development Agency, or what we would call the HDA throughout the presentation, is a newly established, but we're in the housing family, not the newest. We used to be until the SHRA came along, but so babies have to grow up. But we newly established, and we were established by an Act of Parliament, the Housing Act of 2008. Essentially, our function is to promote sustainable communities by making well-located land and buildings available for the development of housing and human settlements. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next few slides. We are an organized state, and obviously we're accountable through our board to the Minister of Human Settlements. There are two main objectives to the agency, and I will take you through those as we go through the presentation. But essentially they are to identify, acquire, hold, develop, and release well-located land, and I stress the well-located because there's often a debate about what that means. So it's land and buildings for the establishment of human settlements, and of course we follow the broader definition of not just housing but human settlements, and again I'll talk a little bit about that in a practical way further on. And secondly, to provide project management support and housing development services, primarily to our major clients, if you like, who would be the provinces and the local authorities. So essentially, we're an agency of the National Department. We work on request from the National Department, but also and especially from provincial and local authorities. We have a mandate. We have linked our deliverables to the function of the Act, and we have obviously a strategic plan. We're currently into our third strategic plan, which is aligned with outcome 8 of the delivery agreements towards the ensuring of sustainable human settlements and the improved quality of household life. What you then have before you, and I'm seeing that the presentation has been distributed, is our goals and our various strategic objectives. Let me run through those very quickly. It'll be the column on the extreme right-hand side, where essentially we're about trying to get the speedy release of public land to the HDA, and again make those two points. It's speedy, which is in the process of happening. We're revving up on that one. It's public land at this point in time. It's to identify and plan for the realization of those land opportunities into the development sector, for human settlement development, to manage a land inventory and info system, and we have a very sophisticated GIS-based system now which allows us to indicate where land is held and by whom around the country, to establish the identification, the planning, and the release of land. And it's both the planning issue and the release that are the important ones for us at this point in time. We've found that we've been able to identify it quite easily. It's getting into the next two stages that's important. Our second area would be where we've managed to acquire land. We need to secure and manage it and then release it into the public sphere at this point in time via provincial and local authorities. In terms of promoting sustainable human settlements, our Act provides for the development of priority development area frameworks. We are in the process of getting the regulations through for that and then implementing projects to create capacity to implement those projects and then to coordinate and facilitate the planning, structuring and implementation again to organs of state. These are a bit repetitive and you will see the actual practical outcomes in the slides that follow. Our third visionary goal is to establish organizational credibility, to have an organization that people know works and trust it with their money. And there our objectives are to develop an organization that applies effective and compliant systems to the delivery process, as well as building a values-based, sustainable, and performance-focused organization. And we think that we've managed to do that so far. And then finally to the area of intergovernmental collaboration, which of course is very important in our work, to secure through agreements, IGR partnerships, facilitate that into not only agreements but contracts for work, and support, IGR will be supporting the establishment and management of those contracts, both at a strategy and a fiscal alignment point of view. Let me then move on to how we work. I've kind of tried to sketch the conceptual and the legal and compliance framework so far, but essentially we work through negotiated agreements with provinces and municipalities by establishing implementation protocols. They're structured in such a way that they talk about how we work with them, what are the areas of operational activity around land assembly and project management, and how do we deal with funding. We have four major programs, if you like, The first I'm not going to deal with in detail, which is just about establishing the HDA. We currently have 75 members of staff. We operate in three offices around the country, one in Johannesburg, where our head office is located with the central function, and then two project offices, one in Cape Town, running with primarily the N2 project, and one in Port Elizabeth and Nelson Mandela, running primarily with the Zanabula project, and we'll talk a bit about those. From an intergovernmental relations and strategy alignment point of view, again, if you look at the key targets, those would be our targets going forward, establishing a framework, dealing with the various local and provincial authorities, and ensuring that there is alignment between what they want, what we do, how we fund it. So far, we obviously have the delivery agreement, which has been signed between the various ministers, and then we have subordinate implementation protocols in place with those provinces, Limpopo, the Free State, and the Northern Cape. We're on the cusp of finalizing with the Northwest and KZN. We have agreements with the Western and Eastern Cape around. We have existing agreements, which we are renegotiating around existing projects. We work with 9 municipalities. And we're also working with other agencies of both the national department and other parts of government, like the Council for Geoscience, where they have a very significant GIS capacity, which we are tapping into. Land, one of our key legs. Our targets there are identifying 36 hectares of public land for acquisition. That's public land, 6,000 hectares of private land, which we would like to move into as well, because often you find that private land abuts public land in such a manner that it would make a sustainable human settlement. In order to assess whether those are worth developing, we've done feasibility studies, and then we're looking to not only identifying, but in the last two targets, actually releasing land either to our clients, who would be the local and provincial authorities, or directly to the HDA itself. We are currently focusing on the delivery agreement target of 6,250 hectares, where the delivery agreement establishes criteria, which have been now agreed across the three departments that are involved, and we have a joint coordinating committee, and this is not, we think, an insignificant achievement, comprising the Department of Human Settlements, Public Works, Rural Development, Public Enterprises, and of course the HGA. That committee is working. It's working against the enhanced framework for release of state land, and we're hoping in the not too distant future to see significant portions of state-owned land, public-owned land, coming into the HGA or going directly to the relevant local and provincial authorities. In terms of where we're at on that process, we've identified 33 hectares of land and formally requested its release. Of those 33,000, 16,000 are at various release and disposal stages within the custodian departments. Whereas the 33,000 at the top were identified last year, we've identified a further 12,000 in this financial year with a greater focus on urban settlements, if you like. The previous ones were a bit of a scattered environment, or scattergun, if you like. The identification for this year, in line with the criteria that we've now agreed, are more focused on urban areas. Not to the detriment, in anticipation of the question that's going to come, I'm sure, Mr. Chair, not to the detriment of the rural areas, but there is a focus on human settlement in areas where people are moving. SOE land, state-owned enterprise land, is obviously a very important area, and in particular we're working with Transnet. Transnet releases lists of non-core land, non-core properties. HDA, in terms of our agreements with them, or rather in terms of the agreements that the department has with them, has a first glance at those. We've looked at the 6,000, almost 6,700 properties that they've identified. We've selected 1,500, and of that, after they've been subjected to review, we have now formally asked Transnet for 309 properties. One of the issues at stake there is, given that it's state-owned enterprise as opposed to a state department, what's the compensation framework? Because as you're probably aware, state-owned entities have been arguing that they have a balance sheet, they have to justify their balance sheet, they can't just, in terms of PFMA and cabinet decision, release those at less than market, although we've made significant progress in talking to them about the conditions under which they might do that. We have, as a result of another transaction that Transnet had with another entity that the department is currently closing down, we've acquired two inner city buildings and the remainder of the Transnet portfolio, which is about 175 hectares, will also come across to us subject to Treasury approval. Currently, as we stand, we own approximately 9 properties, mainly in the Free State and in Limpopo and Delabella, as a result of a request from the Limpopo province. So we own 167 hectares with a potential delivery of 8,000 units and with a market value currently of just over 100 million rand. And those are the kind of first, we hope, baby steps towards creating the land portfolio that the HDA will have. That's on the land side, Mr. Chairman and members. Let's talk a little bit about the project side. In terms of our targets, we're really looking to provide support, capacity to support to all 9 provinces, especially in the areas of informal settlements and emergency housing and what we call the priority housing development areas. And let me talk a little bit about where we're actually working. We're working in Kanubia, in the KZN area, with the Tekwini municipality. Those of you who are not familiar with it will probably become so over time, because it is potentially the largest mixed-use development in the country. It's along that entire strip of land, going from north of Umhlanga right up to the new airport. And it will yield a huge development of residential, commercial, leisure, all of those things. It really will be a massive project, at least 55,000 units, probably 200,000 people accommodated in that over a 10 to 15 year period. And there we are working with them to establish a project management role around the project as a whole. In the Northern Cape, we're working with the province and with those particular municipalities, and there we're helping them create a plan to acquire land and to do the development of the project in those areas. In Nelson Mandela, in addition to the Zanavula project right at the bottom of the slide, where we're the actual implementing agent, we're also working with the local authority around an inner city precinct called the Mermaids Development, which will be about taking the derelict buildings and upgrading them for residential purposes. And then in your own backyard here, we are now the responsible implementing agent for the N2 Gateway project, and we believe we have been helpful in getting the local and provincial authorities to turn that project around, and we would be pleased to say that we believe that it is turned around. In fact, not only our belief, it's a fact. Just to talk about Zanambula and the N2, because in a sense you're concerned about service delivery, and we haven't really identified in specific sense of the questions that you asked, Chair. We try to do it through saying what we do. But these are the projects that we're involved in our biggest delivery framework, which is Zanambula. We're planning 9,000 top structures, and we've done 3,000 to date, 12,000 service sites, of which 6,000 have been completed, and the multipurpose community center, which is already completed. In the N2, 11,000 top structures were planned, of which 8,600 have been completed, and in the TRAs, which are the transitional relocation area frameworks, we've done 1,500 planned, we've done 444 to date. And just to indicate two things about that. Firstly, all of these sites are obviously in areas which are servicing the poorer sections of the community. They will be, in general, RDP or informal settlement upgrades. They will make housing and community activities or services available to very substantial numbers of people working in and living in those areas. They do create work, and the reason we're not reporting on the financials or the job stats is because that generally goes through our clients or the provinces, and we don't want to reproduce and plan to be double accounting when we talk about jobs or subsidies, etc. I do want to draw your attention to the multi-purpose community centre. There is a picture of it coming a bit further on. If I can take you to there, if you look at the picture on the top left hand, it's a very innovative scheme. It's the first community centre in this particular area. It comprises classrooms for adult education, volleyball courts, small soccer fields, some small gardens, and will be a significant asset to the community in that area. The other pictures here represent the work that we've done. You can see the kind of housing that is being built. We have, we believe, significantly improved the quality of housing that has been produced in a very fraught area in that part of the world. The picture on the extreme left is a function that was held for old age people in the area that we work with, so there's a commitment to providing services into the community. And again, you can see that there are jobs created. I mean, there are probably 300 to 400 people working in these areas on the construction project that we are running. This is the Cornubia project that I talked about. Let me just go back to the M2. Again, you will be familiar. There would be the M. There's the freeway with the project on the side of the freeway. You again will see the kind of projects that are being built and developed. It's probably still the biggest single project in the country, with vast amounts of money having gone into it. It certainly is delivering at this point in time, and although it was seen as a kind of nightmare some 2 years ago, there's no doubt now that it is starting to deliver to what people want it to be. Talk a little bit about PE. Cornubia is the project out in KZN. Again, it would at the moment it is being sugarcane fields. It's going to be developed in that kind of environment or that sort of framework, and as I've indicated, it's going to be a massive development. Which is going to accommodate approximately 200,000 people over time. Just to give some indication of the capacity that we've got to identify land and do analyses of the land and what its potential is, we have a capacity in-house now to say this is who owns what in various areas. We're able to identify land in terms of where it sits in relation to population, migration, and movement, in relation to jobs, in relation to transport nodes, and be able to say this land is or isn't suitable around a range of criteria, which in particular relate to location, jobs, transport. Here you have people going around looking at the land. Obviously, they sometimes have to actually go into the field and try and identify where provinces or local authorities would want land to be developed. In that situation, we would be trying to talk to provinces about a 5 to 10 year land assembly program, and we would try to do it in terms of their strategic plans about where they think development should happen in relation to the demand from people in their areas. Intergovernmental relations, just some pictures about the signing up of those very important bases for new development. We also do quite a lot of work with stakeholders in terms of developing processes and procedures. We've been quite instrumental because of our work in the N2 and Zanambula. We've been quite instrumental in starting to develop what is in fact a project management approach to large scale projects, and have been sought after. That's a group from Etiquini and the Gateway project, Etiquini and the Cornubia project, coming to look at the Gateway project to see what lessons there are to be learned from it, both good and bad. And that's a function that we're performing quite successfully at the moment. So that's a broad overview, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And essentially, if we were to talk about the HDA in summary, we would say that it's a two-year-old institution. It is involved primarily in the acquisition, assembly, and release of land. It provides project management services. We're currently involved in a number of big projects around the country, which are contributing significantly to the provision of human settlement in those areas. And I'm happy to take, of course, any questions. Let me just say that he did introduce himself, but the man to my right is the General Manager in charge of Intergovernmental Relations, and Joe will help me with any questions that need to be answered. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable members, what I'll suggest is that, number one, due to time constraint, I'll request us, when we ask questions, we mustn't repeat questions. We must be straight to the point, except the follow-ups, so that we can give an ample time to other people whom we have invited to have an opportunity to give us something. But what I'll suggest now, I'll open question, we'll go, if we agree, because we started at 9:30 instead of 9. We'll go from now I think it's 10 o'clock, it's about to 10, till 10:30. And then strict, we start to give the second one. But nevertheless, I'll give it to the members to start to ask questions. It's open for questions, honorable members. Wabum Lenzane, followed by Jovan Lili. Babu Mlenzane, Honorable Mlenzane, followed by Honorable Grunewald, followed by Honorable Member Temba, Honorable Member Jacobs.
Thanks, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me there put it up front, Chairperson, that the questions that I'm going to raise, the departmental officials need not get shocked when you see them submitted for a written reply, because I had already drafted them, but needless, when you are here, I think you better also shed some light. Just two questions, Chairperson, not many. One, it's on the concept of a human settlement. Remember, Chairperson, the visit we made at Cuba. If the department could link to me this concept of changing from housing to human settlements, vis-a-vis this concept I have been raising time and again with the minister on excuse me, on co-housing. Do you see the difference? Or it's just a question of semantics or terminology, otherwise it's the same thing. Then the second one, Chairperson, is not presented here. I don't know how to call it, Chairperson, whether it's your risk management or what, but put a plant, but the officials will be able to put it correctly. There are these fires, Chairperson, particularly in your informal settlement, which we know that whenever it is winter, we know that there would be fires in our you know, informal settlements affecting lives, many, many lives. What is on the cards in terms of trying to avert this so that at least, because the reality is that you as a department are not going to be able to just undo this question of informal settlements within a span of a minute or a day. It is going to take us time that we have this informal settlement. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I will be very short. I just have a few questions. We know that the Honourable Minister said we must speed up this human settlement projects in South Africa, but I think you have some problems who can have a delay on it, and that is what is the general problems you have to get the private land to develop. I think maybe you have such problems there. If you can deal it with us, I will appreciate it. And the sizes of houses in general, what is the size of houses you are busy building at this stage? And some of my questions you answer in one or other way. When you develop an area, what about graveyards, cemeteries? Are you? I know it's getting a problem in South Africa at this stage. What are you doing about this? And you answer the schools and the parks and parks as well. There is land available for parks in a area, but are you developed these parks as well? Or you just leave a piece of land for parks and then you get out of it? So I want to know what developing takes place in parks for the children and for the people staying in that areas. And there's a lot of money is making available for this development now at this stage. And now it's very easy for corruption also to take place. What management do you have in place to see that no corruption is taking place in this whole project that is coming up now? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the first place, maybe let me say, if you can clarify us how the agency was put in place. I'm saying, Chair, through you, if maybe we can be clarified how this agency was established. For example, when I look at you, you are all males. Whether there are no like female in this agency. And then it's difficult also because your slide doesn't have the numbers. But there is a slide where delivery agreement for output 2-3, you've got only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 provinces. What about other provinces? If you can clarify us also whether you do you have offices in all these provinces and where are they located? Because when we like now we are going on recess, if one wants to go and get further information from a province that one comes from, then we would like to you know, if there is a, to know whether there is an office there. And there is also the slide that says land identification and release. You've got 33,000 hectares of state land that have been identified and formally requested for release from the custodian department. Which are those custodian departments? And also, where is this? Where? Which provinces? If on this slide you can elaborate the areas where these hectares are. Also, the next slide also on public land identification. The Transnet, the Nanco properties. If we can told where are this project in, that you have identified with Transnet. Because we've got land in Mpumalanga, Transnet land in Mpumalanga, we've got in Northern Cape, we have. But if you can maybe just elaborate to us to say in this province we have identified so many and they are, the land is at, the properties are maybe in Nelspruit, in middle of town or in Komatipoort, if you can clarify us on that. And also maybe if you can, because the slides that, all the slides that you have shown, I saw many, many, many mails. If you can, just tell us where you go, whether you do come across women who are not the, who are willing to also to go and look for land, like those men, which slide is that? Land assembly identification and feasibility. Maybe it's only men who are looking for land, who have got the knowledge of how to go about. But just explain to us whether women are not interested, or which criteria are you using, or why is your picture just full of males? Thanks.
Babu Jacobs.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My first question is based on the two main objectives. You say you identify, acquire, hold, and develop and release the land. I just want to check when you do this, is it according to your own special analysis, or are you including the municipality special planning or even provincial special planning? Because we are saying development that has been done should not be far away from places of work and the CBD. So what you are doing, are you accommodating this? The second one, say you provide project management support. How do you provide this support? And who are doing these projects? The municipality, or is it the private institutions? The other one, just to emphasize on what Honorable Temba said in your offices, you started by saying head office is in Johannesburg, you talked about Cape Town and Eastern Cape. So we normally say you always start where these areas are well developed. And in the areas where they are not well developed, you don't have these structures. I think it's one of our concerns. The other one, you talked about the joint coordinating committee. I'm not so sure, because as a human settlement, we said we need to move away from the previous planning. When we plan, we need to have land, we need to have road, we need to have water, electricity, and so on. So how do you do that? Because I think there should be a coordinating structure which is coordinating that before you build all those structures should be there. Other issues that just unfortunate delegates from Gauteng are not here. Seemingly, the Gauteng province is having a problem with Transnet on the issue of land. I don't know. Can you maybe give us a briefing on that? The other one, you have identified properties. Provinces, property location, and so on. Now, I'm very much interested that you have Kroonstad, Bethlehem, and Bloemfontein. Maybe we need to know the actual properties where you have acquired, so that as we go back, we are able to make a follow-up and see what you have done. For instance, I come from Bethlehem, so I'll be very much interested to know those properties that you have identified. Also, it's a question on this project that you are engaged in. On the other side, it's a facilitative role, PM support to project, the other is an implementing agent, project management. Says, can you give us clarity on that one, or on these issues that you have put on that other end? Thank you.
Okay. I would like to maybe join the members, maybe I won't be long, just one or two. Maybe I'll be very much maybe grateful if you can maybe give us a background. What is the relationship? What is your relationship with the traditional leaders? Because some of the land, we believe that it belongs to them in some of the areas we were coming from. And then also, what is your relationship with the civic organization, for an example, such as SANCO? Because SANCO can also play a role to assist you. I'll put an example, what was raised by Ubabu Mlenza, whereby where people, if they're not controlled, they just go to any land and occupy and put some shacks and everything at the end that will cost the burden to whatever municipality. And then lastly, the relationship with the local municipalities, because it was alleged that before the new dispensation, some of the people have reserved a lot of land from the municipalities before the new dispensation. So a lot of land was sold out. I'll put an example. Some times ago, there was a land where they used to plow citrus, like, which an emblem outspan, meaning that those citrus must be identified that they belong to the government. Such land have disappeared. This is normal. And also some of the land where they used to plow forestry because they regarded this land as unused land. Well, that would be my submission at the moment, and so that I can give an opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. There's obviously a wide range of questions around different areas. So, at the risk of putting you on the spot, I think that some of them were directed at the department, particularly the first question. So I'm going to ask if Mark could talk to those questions, and then I will ask Mr. Shabani to talk about some of the others, and if there are items that we haven't picked up, I will come in at the end. Let's get it in that order.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question from Honourable Mlenzane has to do with the concept of human settlements, which currently the department is grappling with, and we are developing what is known as a turnaround strategy, in which we need to identify what constitutes a human settlement. So currently, within the department, there is a project known as turnaround strategy, which is going to focus on what actually constitutes human settlements. And in that process, we are busy also coming up with service level agreements with other departments which are having a role or a stake to play with regards to the delivery of human settlements. So currently, it's still a half-cook concept, which we are being busy with currently. On the issue of core housing, we are also looking at that because we need to know whether core housing and also cooperatives and also how do they differ from issues such as social housing and also issues around sectional titles. I think the sectional titles bill came via this committee, and part of those issues was looking at co-housing. So perhaps maybe, as you have indicated, that you have already drafted a parliamentary question. Based on that, you'll get a comprehensive answer as soon as we receive that from the department. Thank you, Chair.
thank you, Chair. Perhaps it may be useful, Chair, to point out upfront that the agency's employment equity is such that over 50% of employees are in fact female. The professional core of the agency is predominantly female. It only happens that today, Chair, due to different commitments that colleagues have, it is just myself and the CEO who are present here. However, Chair, the committee can rest assured that the employment equity, in particular the gender balance, is very much in line with what would be expected of a public entity in this day and era. Having said that, Chair, I thought I might just make that general overall remark, but the specific questions that were put to us, in the first instance, was the problems relating to accessing privately owned land. Chair, the committee would be aware that in the open market, as the law would prescribe, you would engage with any owner of land and agree as to, one, their availability of their property to be sold, at what price, and the terms thereof. That's not a problem. The only limitation on the part of the agency is that the agency does not necessarily have the capital to acquire privately owned land. So it is a space in which, where and on the basis of available capital, so provinces would make available the funds for acquiring certain properties, we would acquire on that basis. But well-located land as a principle, well-located land is in itself high value, highly priced, and therefore it is really the negotiations upon which we can then conclude sale agreements and the transfer thereof. So a point to make is really that because it's capital intensive, the extent to which privately owned land can be acquired is on the basis of the money that's available to the agency, whether availed through the provinces or local authorities or other parties. The size of houses that are built are regulated by the prevailing minimum norms and standards as approved by the minister. Those would be contained in the housing code. The current minimum norm is that the house has to be a 40 square meters in terms of the subsidy. Anything above that is a bonus in terms of the subsidy. Again, depending on what target market is aimed at, then the design of the product would be according to that. Chair, the reality is that, as the Minister and the President have pronounced, the human settlements is beyond just housing. And therefore, from the agency's point of view, the land that is being identified for release responds to the need for shelter, houses, and accompanying uses. And this would relate to matters of recreation, matters of commercial development, matters of access, matters of infrastructure, including but not limited to such provisions as graveyards, parks, other open spaces, and so forth. In fact, many municipalities that have approached the agency looking for state land, it was in part to be able to accommodate graveyards. So it is a concern that many municipalities are looking at. And from the point of view of the agency, to the degree that they are asking for those pieces of properties, we can assist them in getting those land parcels released. We are required, Chairperson, in terms of the prevailing one PFMA, but also overall, the governance framework demands that we put in place a fraud and corruption prevention measures in place. So those are in place. If need be, those can be made available. There's a comprehensive framework around fraud and corruption prevention, not only in the agency, but as would be the expectation of the National Treasury as well. Madam Chair, my apology. Chairperson, the reality is that the agency has a high density of the professional core, and I'm saying professionals in the sense of town planners. We have one of the rarest skills in the country, so-called geomatics engineering. That's the people who are doing GIS and all of that. And that, Chairperson, is indeed the pride of the agency, that in fact we've assembled the best capacity in the country, the best skills in the country in respect of the professional input that is required to attend to this work. Incidentally, again, that's not an accident. I suppose it's the competence that is there. The head of the project's division is, in fact, female.
As is the CFO.
Yes. Now, let me move quickly into the area around the relationship between the agency and the provinces and other bodies, traditional authorities, local authorities. By law, by definition of the agencies or the HDA Act, the agency has to work collaboratively with provinces, local authorities, and other organs of state. So there is nothing that the agency does that it has not agreed or collaborated with a province or a local authority or another organ of state. There's very little that the agency can do. So by design, the agency is required to be able to collaborate with provinces and local authorities. We have concluded implementation protocols with some of the provinces. Some are in negotiation. Some are not yet ready to engage with us at that level. They are still sorting themselves out, being clear what they require from the agency. But we are in constant communication with those provinces, as well as municipalities. Chair, you would appreciate that there's over 200 municipalities in the country. We have started with predominantly urban municipalities. We are increasingly going into the reach of the other local authorities, the Kwadukuza, Lephalale, Bela-Bela, and so on and so on, what I would call less densely populated municipalities. But it is envisaged that we will be supporting municipalities that require our services. The dynamic here, Chair, is that in some cases you can only work with those who want to work with you. It's a practical reality. Where municipalities or provinces are not ready to engage with us, we can't impose ourselves on them. We have to embark on a dialogue with them to ensure that we can align our work with their work. Where necessary, we'll conclude an implementation protocol. In other instances, it's just a request for service that is done, and then it does not require an implementation protocol. But specifically, Chair, the presence of the agency in a whole, rather, all other provinces is subject to the degree of the amount of work that we agree with those provinces. It would be inefficient at this point to simply open up offices in all provinces when we first want to be certain that there is these agreed areas of operation for the agency, then the agency assembles the capacity to do that work. That is the path that we are following. Those are the engagements and understandings with the provinces. Chairperson, the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs is represented on the board of the agency. In part, that attends to the strategic oversight of the agency in respect of that portfolio. But, Chair, where we are encountering communal land, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform is quite instrumental in ensuring that the processes that are outlined and required to release land that is subject to traditional authorities, we engage with that, we comply. So far, everything else has gone very well. Those community engagements, community resolutions have been passed where they needed to be passed. We have not encountered any animosity or any tension with traditional authorities. In fact, it's been one of the smoothest areas of operation, albeit small. The same would apply with local authorities. We would be engaging with the municipalities on the basis of appreciating their IDPs and the SDFs so that our work is aligned, but it also enhances their work. Chair, I would be hesitant to comment on the either perceived or reported fraudulent transactions on land in respect of municipalities predating 1994. We have not been favored with those details. However, the only basket of properties that we've dealt with is what we would call the S1 Housing Board properties. The housing boards were disestablished, the land parcels or properties were to be devolved to local authorities. That's the land that we encounter, and where appropriate, we deal with the relevant authority. The last two comments here relate to the necessary processes that the agency embarks upon. Land identification requires that we define what is well located. Well located is on the basis of functionality, it's on the basis of physical attributes. It is also on the basis that the municipality in its IDP or special development plan thinks that that land is well located. So we undertake spatial analysis. It's robust. It's triangulated with the provincial spatial development or growth plans or municipal IDPs, so much so that what we eventually identify resonates with those authorities. The agency is not a planning authority. The planning authority vests with the local authority, as the case is. And therefore, Chair, we can make available the sort of provincial distribution of the land that's been identified. That's information that's available. In the same way, the transferred properties, we can make available the provincial distribution of such without necessarily getting to the specific parcel of land, because that information
is subject to procedures that are outside of the agency, but we can indicate in this province, in this municipality, this is the extent of land that's been identified. Chair, let me conclude by dealing with the project management services. Okay, there's two parts, but as I indicated, these services of the agency are provided to the provinces and local authorities in the main on the basis of agreed areas of operation. You would see that in some cases we are required simply to be a facilitating agent. In other cases, we are the implementing agent, as would soon be in some of the provinces, we would be carrying the full implementation arrangements relating to particular land developments. But that's again on the basis of agreement with the provinces or the local authorities themselves. So it varies. It depends what is the capacity demands of a province or a local authority. If you look at the city of Johannesburg, for example, the discourse that is currently underway is to say, assist us with the implementation of informal settlements upgrading, and again, it's a particular and specific role that they are requesting assistance on. On the other hand, you look at the Northern Cape province, the request was to say, help shape an overall province-wide informal settlements upgrading program. So it will vary depending on the demands of the province. And lastly, Chair, what we refer to as the Joint Coordinating Committee, specifically relating to the release of state land, given that state land is held either by nationally, public works, rural development and land reform on the other, similar arrangements you'd find public works in the provincial space. So the coordination is around specifically releasing state land, given that it's such a priority. So it's only in respect of the land release. In respect of human settlement development overall, that would be the ambit of the province or any project development steering committee, depending who the developer is. But the land, the joint coordinating committee that we're referring to relates to the releasing of state land. Chairperson, where there are challenges with the Transnet land, in Gauteng in particular, we are aware of some parts, but the province has not indicated to us the extent of that problem. We would be very happy to assist with that, given that we are in full cooperation with the Transnet Property Division in respect of releasing certain properties for housing and human settlements. Chair, thank you very much. Right. Before I give, thank you very much for your responses, but I will highlight one or two things. Number one, I'll be very much grateful that maybe before the end of this week you supply us the information about the thing which was raised earlier on in your, also which you tried to respond. The issue of, remember, we have asked a question that which are the provinces which you have maybe targeted, whatever, because the other provinces are appearing, other provinces are not appearing. You indicated that some of the provinces partially are not cooperative because you are still engaging them. Please help us to get that information, that which provinces which are giving a problem and which provinces which are positive. And then the other one is, you indicated that in terms of the land identified, you said it can be provided, divided as per province also, you can give it to us. But last, I can't leave this one unchallenged. By referring to the chair as Madam Chair time and again, I was just quiet. I was looking at you. You see, there is a wrong perception which is done by some of the people when they come to attend, in particular in the NCOP, because your mindset is channeled to NA, where the chairperson is Madam Chair. In short, when you come here, you are not prepared for us. You are preparing, you prepared for Madam Chair. And also, that's why the issue of full compliments, when you come to us, you don't send us a full complement of your structure. You just pick up one or two people. That's why the issue of gender balances will come again. And next time, not now, some of the people will be requested to go back and prepare themselves, because we take it very seriously, the issue of gender balance. We don't need a theory, we need practical. Don't tell us with theory that the gender is balanced, while practical, some of the people are sidelined. We know what is happening in some of the entities as well as the department. When serious matters about this one, they just take us just for plenary debauchery. It must come to an end, because next time we'll request the people to go back, because people are not aware that NCOP is alive and kicking very well, and we do have powers to do that. And then, without wasting any time, we'll go to the next one, but with the condition that we are expecting that information which we have requested from you, we'll be going to Rural Housing Loan Fund. Same applies to you, colleagues, what we are requesting. The time now is 2 minutes after 1:30. From now up until 11 o'clock, we are expecting you to give us the briefing. And from there, another maybe 20 or 30 minutes, we interrogate your presentation. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the... No, I didn't say. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity to present about Rural Housing Loan Fund. I will not make that mistake. I listen very carefully to the chairman.
People from the department are here. Sure. We take this matter very seriously. We're not joking. Next time we'll send them back.
That is the outline of our presentation. We'll touch on the mandate and the mission of RALF and look at the key performance areas, as well as the impact in provinces. And then we'll look at the priorities of government that we as RALF support, and end by a remark.
Okay, from my side, I'll check my issue. I'll be concerned about the members. Members, do you have this document? Do you have this document? Okay, fine. I'll be very much grateful if we can start to give it to the members quick before. Chief. All right. I'll request you to proceed.
Thank you very much, sir. RALF mandate is to facilitate housing finance for low-income earners who want to improve their housing conditions in rural areas. In terms of our mandate, rural areas is broadly defined to include the communal land, rural towns, as well as small towns. And then another element of our mandate is that we have to support government priority of rural development, which is currently within the framework of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. Another addition on our mandate is that we have to support government's efforts to expedite housing delivery in rural areas. And in that regard, we, together with the department, have worked together to formulate a program called Individual Rural Housing Voucher Program, which in essence is intended to enable people living on communal land to access government subsidy finance on individual basis and embark on owner building process. The program has been approved, in fact was approved by Minimac. What is outstanding at this point is the approval of the implementation process. In terms of the target market, we look at people or finance people who are earning currently 9,800 and less per month. For a long time it was up to 7,500, but in terms of what has been approved, I mean last financial year, the upper limit of income was increased to 9,800 to take into account of inflation and also to looking at the gap market in rural areas, that is people who can't access mortgage finance because they reside on communal land and they can't produce title to land so that they can be able to take bigger loans and build bigger and better houses in rural areas. Our mission essentially is to empower people in rural areas to maximize their housing choices so that they can improve their housing conditions by one, accessing housing finance from our retail lenders. RALF is set up as a wholesale finance institution. We have intermediary lenders who enable us to have the national footprint. The element of our mission is, of course, to enable access to the government and the subsidy program through the voucher program that I've touched on. Just to share with the committee, there were sometimes, you know, pictures tell a better story than the words. Last year, together with the department, we visited the end user borrowers in the same case in Bizana. So there are various housing situations. In the first slide, there is a teacher who resides on communal land who was able to access 44,000 rand and build a house, I mean, for his family on communal land. It's a bigger and better house. I mean, that is just a portion of the house. Unfortunately, I don't have a photograph that shows the full elevation of the house. On the second slide, it's a nurse, again in Bizana. She accessed finance to build, I would say, rental units on her yard. So that we call that productive housing, when people take loans so that they can actually build rooms or air space that they can use for income generating activities. That's one situation where I facilitate. The third photograph is a surveyor who works in Durban, took a loan, did not build in Durban, but built his house in the area where he comes from in the Eastern Cape. You see a lot of that where people will take loans, where they're working in housing, but then invest loans where they come from in rural areas. So we enable those people to improve the housing conditions of their household members where they live. RALF's key performance areas. The first one is that we have to have the finance reach throughout the provinces of South Africa where our mandate allows us to lend. So the first measure of that is the number of loans that we disperse via our intermediaries. So basically the graph there shows the longitudinally how RALF has performed since 2005 up to 2011. And in the following years, basically those could be projections. But I think the thing I wanted to indicate is that the first measure of rural housing finance reach is the number of end-user loans that we finance through our intermediaries. And then the second measure is the ZEDU now, that is in rands and cents, the annual disbursement. How much per year do we disperse to intermediaries, which in turn they or lend to individual borrowers, so that we can enhance the rural housing finance reach. Again, that graph there shows longitudinally from 2009 and also projected, I mean, up to 2014, what we think we'll be able to achieve in terms of annual disbursement, and as well as including the mezzanine funding that we give to our, I'll say, low-risk clients. Another measure of rural housing finance reach is the total or vice versa, I mean advanced book, you know, comparatively, where are we now? How was the value of our book? So you see that by 2011, we're projecting to have 23 million being the gross advanced book of RALF. That's another measure of the Royal Housing Finance reach. That slide basically summarizes, I would say, our rural housing finance in terms of impact. We use the balance scorecard, which look at different areas of our performance, one being stakeholder and client, another one being finance. So the slide that basically summarizes the numbers that you talk to performance. I've touched on some of this, like disbursement, the value of loans in place of gross, I mean, loans or gross advances. But I think if the committee can just look at, here we talk about our target in terms of what percentage of our loans should be taken by people earning within specific categories. We basically set targets for those, and then when we perform at the end of the financial year, we look at how we performed against those targets. There's a slide, later in the presentation that basically will indicate, you know, the development impact versus, I mean, the target that we have set. The second measure of our rural housing finance reach, again, is reflected or summarized in that slide, which looks now at financial performance. We look at the income that we receive from the core business, I mean, activities, and essentially look also at the surplus that we are able to achieve, because as a DFI, we have to achieve impact, but also we have to ensure that we have surplus that we invest or reinvest in the business in order to ensure that RALF will be able to achieve its mandate in the years to come. Basically, that slide captures, I mean, our strategies of what we do in order to try to increase the number of loans that for this current financial year in particular. We intending to add two more community-based organizations. Those will be smaller, community-based organizations like cooperatives who can take loans from us and be able to improve their housing conditions. The impact will be high, but unfortunately the scale is very low. But to ensure that we scale up the access, we want also to attract one new intermediary, a microfinance institution, which can actually access a bigger loan facility from us and lend at a much bigger scale in order to enhance impact. We'll also be trying to lower the cost of interest to some of our intermediaries who are giving us high impact. Two of those currently is RCH and Lenco. They are using building material suppliers as their loan distribution channel. So what we are working with them currently is to give them a low interest rate product, which so that they can actually lend to the borrowers and pass over the benefits of low interest rate to their end user borrowers to enhance affordability. I'll touch on that. The slide indicates the 5-year performance of RALF, calculating in 2011 in terms of the number of end user loans that have been dispersed per annum, as well as the cumulative figure. In the next slide, what we did, we basically distributed the number of loans that were dispersed in the last financial year only by province. What you see in the slide is that KwaZulu-Natal basically led, I mean, the pack with about 35% of the loans going to that province, followed by the Eastern Cape at 23% and Gauteng at 15%. I think for us, the concern is that there are provinces which have a huge potential and actually where we need to do more lending there. One of those, Babu Jacobs, will be Free State. If Free State has a huge potential, we are happy that some of our intermediaries are making inroads there, but we can do more. Similarly, in Limpopo. In Limpopo, again, we are currently lending at 4.4%, the total number of the proportion of our loans that go to Limpopo. We can certainly do more. In Mpumalanga, Mamthemba, it's about 6%. We believe, again, we can do more there. In Northern Cape, at 1%, is always a concern. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I think it reflects the reality. I mean, if you look at the total population of the Northern Cape, and also take into account the number of people there who can afford loans, I think there will always be less. I think given the national budget, I mean, reflects that. But with that as it may, what we say to our intermediaries is that we have to try to do more, because those areas are also areas of need. In terms of annual disbursements, again, the total disbursements in the last financial year ended in March was 113 million in terms of cash disbursements, but including mezzanine funding was 224 million. In the next slide, I will actually show the distribution of the value of loans by province. Again, consistent with the previous slide, the major provinces was KwaZulu-Natal as well as Eastern Cape. But you'll notice now that Gauteng, most of the loans actually went to Gauteng. But again, we'll note here what I've indicated earlier, that you'll have people in Gauteng taking loans which are in Gauteng, but then investing them where they come from. But that as it may, again, the concern is that we still need to do more in some of the provinces where we're currently lending, but lending less. But at least what we appreciate as Ralph is that we have gone a long way in terms of actually reaching all provinces of the country. We can certainly do more. And to do more, it would mean basically that we have to try to attract intermediaries who are located in these provinces. Because it's easier to grow in a particular, let's grow lending in a province if you have an intermediary located there. Mr. Chairperson, apart from our normal lending business that we have done since we established, we have answered the call of the department and the minister that we have to try to find the mechanisms of supporting and contributing to outcome aid, which basically is part of the service delivery agreement signed by the minister and the president. We as Ralph, when we look at what we do, we thought there are two areas where we can make maybe a small contribution. The first one is informal household upgrading. And basically there are people who will have access to service sites, but who will not be able to access mortgage finance because of their levels of income, who also may not access government subsidy. I think the opportunity for those people to improve their housing conditions or to build their house would be to either use their own savings or to borrow money. So we believe we can play a role there using informal housing finance products that we facilitate to assist those people to improve their housing conditions in the informal settlements. And then the second element is on backyard rentals. There are people currently who have shacks in their backyards, and we believe we could assist those people to build a quality unit on their backyards that they could actually rent out and generate income, which could assist them. So what we're currently doing, we are engaging provinces so that we can get a better picture of where service sites have been delivered in informal settlements, so that working with our intermediaries, we can basically identify business opportunities there, or borrowers who could access loans to improve their housing conditions. In other words, Honorable Chairperson, will be engaging with provinces more around outcome aid. We've started already with the Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, but I'm still waiting for more details. But I'll be engaging with all provinces so that whichever province is ready, we can see what we can do working with intermediaries, with our intermediaries rather, to support them. I touched on the individual rural housing subsidy as an addition to our mandate. I wanted to share with the committee here, but that is a summary of the program. But I think what I can just indicate, as I've done before, is that the essence of the voucher program is to enable people living on communal land to access government subsidy individually, not on project-based basis, so that they themselves can then drive their own building process. If you look at how RAS has performed, we have enabled people to improve their housing conditions themselves, you know, individually. But the finance that they use to do so, it has been loan finance. But there are people who qualify for government subsidy, who can actually use those funds to improve their housing conditions. Then they can then later take loan, maybe to extend their houses and so on, but having first benefited from the government housing program. So that will be the essence of the voucher program, that it will enable them to access government subsidy funds and improve their housing conditions where they are without having to move to new projects. As I've indicated earlier, the implementation process is still to be approved by MINIMEC. But what we have been doing together with the department as well as NATURE has been engaging the Eastern Cape province, because it was identified as a pilot province, and it has in turn identified three municipalities that will participate during the pilot phase. The first one is Mzimvubu, Insikayetu, the third one is Umhlonqo. We have engaged with the municipalities, with the mayors there before the elections, at least. We engaged with them. So now what needs to happen is that the department will be going back to MINIMEC now to seek implementation process to be approved. But in the interim, we are still working together with NATURE to have a very sound business plan, you know, for implementation of the pilot. That is the slide, basically, that summarizes our impact. Our business is lending money, but our ultimate business is try to improve the quality of life of the lenders, or of our end-user borrowers. Those are our ultimate market. So if you look in 2011, about 85% of the loans were used for housing-related purposes. 29% of the loans were used by people who have previously received a government subsidy. It's mainly to extend or improve the quality of an FDP house. 58% of the loans were taken by females. In terms of employment, you will notice that over years, the public sector employees have been accessing loans from our intermediaries more and more. And again, this is the function of how the economy works. We'll notice that in the last couple of years, we have seen a lot of retrenchments in the private sector, and people really who have remained in their jobs are public servants. So what our clients have done is been lending more and more money to the public servants. You'll notice in the photograph that I showed there, I showed you a nurse and a teacher who were able to access some of those bigger loans to build those bigger houses on communal land. That's what has been happening. But we have been saying to our intermediaries, they must be very careful as well, because you don't want to concentrate on public servants and in the process have them highly indebted, because everybody is targeting them. This is the reality. But on the other hand, they are less riskier clients in the sense that they are less likely to be retrenched. But that as it may, I mean, they also have a ceiling. They can lend to them up to a certain point. But we actually think there is no risk as long as our intermediaries stick to the National Credit Act in terms of the affordability of those loans. Now, looking at our borrowers by income, you will notice that 40% of the loans were taken by people who are earning less than 1,500 and less. And then I know here the question is that how can they afford them to take loans? I spoke about Lenco, who is one of our intermediaries, who is giving us high impact. What they do, they actually are assisting pensioners. And I know, again, when you say lend to pensioners, people say, but how can pensioners, afford loans? Well, then what they are doing, they are not charging them interest. They only charge them admin fee per month, which is about 57 rand. But where they benefit is the volume. They give a large number of loans to many, you know, pensioners. It's a niche that they have identified, and in the process, people have improved very, very incrementally their housing condition. What you'll notice also is that below 3,500, between 1,500 and 3,500, the number of borrowers they have decreased if you look over time.
Between 1005 and 2005, last year it was only 6% of the loans that went to that income and 7%. So these are the people basically who have been hard hit by the past adverse economic climate conditions. And then if you look, I mean, above that, people like your teachers, I mean, the number has increased of the proportion of loans that are taken by those people, as well as in the upper income level. That will indicate, I mean, those teachers and this is the professionals that I earlier spoke about. But the challenge basically is within the income group of 1,500 and these are 3,500. As well as we look at other government priorities that we need to support. One is rural development, I've spoken about it, that we try to go deeper and deeper in rural areas in terms of lending. If you look at our annual report, we'll notice that annually we track the number of loans that go to the rural nodes. Unfortunately, I don't have the figures, I mean, currently that we indicate that, but we're currently working on the actual numbers that went to the rural nodes, tracking them by the postal code. And then in terms of SME development, the intermediaries that we work with currently are mainly SMEs, some of them that we helped to get, I mean, started and supported in their growth by giving them facilities. In terms of job creation, we support job creation within the intermediate level because the intermediaries who access funds from us are able to grow and sustain their business, and this process actually give job opportunities. I'll show in the next slide the number of jobs at intermediate level. At local level, it's very, very difficult to give the committee the numbers because people access loans individually. But we know, because we also come from the rural areas, that the higher Obabu Dlamini was why which is a good local builder in a particular village. It's not a permanent job, but it does give people income that they can use basically again to improve their living conditions, albeit, I mean, temporarily. We also have addressed the needs of the second economy in the sense that a number of borrowers from our intermediaries will take loans and add space which they then use for income generating activities like rental space, some will build spaza shops and so on. And then broadly, we do support local economic development. Some of the building merchants in rural areas benefit from the borrowers who purchase building materials, I mean, from them. And also people who earn income locally, they tend to use it locally. Those are the numbers. All in all, the intermediaries that we support, that work with us, give 4,866 job opportunities. You know, they employ that number of people. Some of them are full-time employees, which is 2,900, and then they are field agents who will be basically earning money on commission basis. Now, within RALF, I remember when we had the first engagement with this committee, it was in our office, and the question, I remember very well, Mam Temba asked the question in terms of the numbers. They said next time when we engage, we really want to see the numbers. So that table indicates that basically, all in all, RALF has only 11 employees. It's always a concern to many people, how come we only have 11 when we're a national entity? But you saw in the previous slide that the infrastructure that enables us to do our business and have a national reach, those intermediaries, you can look at the number of people that they employ. So at national level, at the wholesale level, we are able to use that lean, organization to facilitate, I mean, the housing finance through the intermediaries. Well, in conclusion, what we're planning to do, we know that there have been local town elections recently. Working together with the capacity building in the department, they have indicated that they will be actually doing a counselor training on human resentment issues. We'll be participating in that program because we believe it's very important that the new councillors, when they call phrase, understand what housing microfinance can do. I think for the long time in South Africa, we have believed that, not in South Africa by the way, but in many countries, that mortgage finance is the only appropriate financing mechanism, for building a house. And then in our country, because of government subsidy, we tend to think it's either government subsidy and or mortgage finance. But I think in between, we believe housing microfinance or informal housing finance is a huge opportunity to assist low-income earners to improve their housing conditions without fearing that, you know, if they default, they will lose some of their house. It's totally unsecured lending. And then the second point, we believe that outcome aid provides a huge scope, I mean, for us to make even more meaningful impact where government is focusing on informal settlements, upgrading, as well as assisting people to build backyard units which are of quality. And then individual rural housing subsidy voucher program, we believe, is another element that would be of assistance to people on communal land to better improve their housing conditions with accessing government funds rather than loans, and only take loans if they need them, you know, but having benefited first from what they qualify for in terms of government subsidy funds. We'll be trying to intensify our efforts to get new clients who are located in provinces where we currently land less. And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, we believe that government in all spheres, you know, has to accept informal housing finance as an appropriate housing finance mechanism for low-income earners. Our experience has indicated that low-income earners have benefited a lot from the RAF program that the government established in 1996. I will end there, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. The honourable members, I think it has been agreed that we give them 30 minutes and then we'll take another 30 minutes.
And as they already alluded, the Madam Chair will give you an opportunity to start to ask questions. Members, can I have your hands up, please? I'll start the other side and come this way. Start from Honourable Member Dau, Ubaba Ujekos, and then Mr. Hunevals, Ubaba Mlenza. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just two quick things. The linkage with the financial institutions. Does Ralph know exactly the number of people that have made applications with financial institutions for which they have been rejected on the basis of unaffordability and so forth, which is your target market? Because that would also assist in resolving the problem of reaching out to those. Because, I mean, I know in my constituency, in the Northern Cape, in Warrenton, I can tell you tomorrow of people who had wanted to access loans from my financial institutions who have been rejected. And I'm sure the reason why they have not approached you as an agency is because they don't know where you are, they don't know how to access you, and whether if there are intermediaries, I mean, I would not even know which are those intermediaries that are working in the Northern Cape. As a case in point. The second one, Chair, the popularization of this agency, it has always been a worrying factor to me. And how the agency also uses platforms created by Parliament in popularizing themselves. For instance, you have a program by the executive of the Mbizos. You have in provinces there are programs such as taking the executive to the people. In Parliament we have a program such as taking Parliament to the people. I've never seen a stall of RALF in one of our programs ever since I became a member of the NCOP. And if you look at where the NCOP takes its program, it's to the rural area, ordinarily people who would not even have an opportunity to know how Parliament works like and so forth. And I've never seen a stall or a site or whatsoever. And we invite government agencies, we invite everybody to participate by popularizing yourselves and so forth. I can't see the linkage without being very hard. Maybe it's an issue because you are pointing out at your end, at the end there, to this time around to really work on reaching out there. I'm putting this as a suggestion so that they must then begin to look at how best they get access to the people that need their services. Thanks.
Yeah, just a matter of emphasis again. Because I was also worried that how do they market themselves? Because we had been to Limpopo, we had been to Qwaqwa, we have never heard anything about this. And these are rural areas where people should be benefited. That's why maybe you find that some of the provinces are not aggressive on this on this loan because they don't know anything about that. But safe to say what Honorable Tawi has said, and also in your input there, that is, in counselor training, you'll try to make your presentation. But I need you, you need to increase your visibility.
Mam Temba.
Chairperson, thank you. Mine is on the I saw the paper yesterday where in the Northern Cape there is this woman who was in a tent where the president went to say, as Ralph, I think it's the question is related to what has been asked, but definitely if you are an entity and a government entity, you should also make a research in all these provinces because, you know, it's really difficult to see a person staying in a tank. It was in the Northern Cape where this woman is staying in a tank that has put they've put a door there, and you know if you can have a research unit that goes to all these provinces and check where there is a need and how you can assist as a government entity. And also on the training of counselors in provinces, if we can have that program as committee members, so that when you go and do this, if we are in provinces, we will would like to also attend those workshops when you are there. Thanks.
Honourable members, Lawaba said, I wanted to remind you once more, please, the time is limited. You must ask questions, not repeat what was asked earlier on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got only one question, and that is, when people borrowed money from you, with the cost is always rising in the building sector, there must be a percentage of people who are suffering to make the back payments to the organization. And can you give us that percentage? How many people are suffering to do it? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll stick to what you have said because I'm covered in some aspects, except for the pilot project to the specific three municipalities you have mentioned in the Eastern Cape. If one could get details, I don't know where I'm checking because this is the last week, because it could assist if one could meet these newly elected mayors, because in a majority of these, I know for a fact, Mthonto has a new mayor, Mzimbubu has a new mayor. So if one could get a detail,
so that during our constituents' work, there is a briefing that is done with these two mayors. Thank you.
Okay. Nevertheless, I'll touch one or two. Number one, you see, to all what was asked by the members, there is a thing which is worrying me. Because time and again, this first question maybe it might go to the department as well, that we talk about communal land, right? For example, in my province, I know one or two in Dakar and Trifontein, Wangema. But do you have maybe a proper record that which places in different, as per province, so that we empower the colleagues when we go back to know exactly what is happening? Why I'm raising it, what was raised by two members, Honourable Member Tao and Honourable Jacobs, how these things, how do they reach to some of the people, because some of the people which are deeply affected, some of this information doesn't come. And then also, I wanted to find out, what criteria do you use to help the people who are requesting for loan? Because most of the time what is happening, people, when they request 1, 2, 3, the thing is returned back that you don't qualify. What criteria do you use? And also, what is the maximum limit on what is given to the people? And then I wanted to request you to open slides 9 and 10. I wanted to comment something. And there is a thing which is worrying me. You indicated that lending money to improve, for example, RDP houses, etc. You see, that statement sometimes is very difficult because to us, where we are coming from, there are deep rural areas where there are no RDPs, but they need help. And in one of your slides, you indicated, you show us that some of the help that these have requested, this and this and this. That's why the previous presentation we've asked the relationship with the traditional leaders, because some of these things, if you wanted to develop, some institution are telling people that we can't provide you any help because you are from the rural area. Their chief is like this and this and this and this. If you can clarify us. Sorry, that's slide number 9 and 10. Where there's a place where you spoke about Gauteng and the areas which you have provided some money, not this one. Sorry. Yeah, that one. That's what I want. Which is the 5%? It's KZN. Okay. Gauteng. I wanted you to comment about Gauteng, which is green. How many percentage for Gauteng? 15%. You see, we wanted to ask, maybe to be honest, sometimes, where is the rural area in Gauteng? What do you mean exactly? Because, you know, there is this debate whereby people, if we talk in terms of rural areas, they talk about areas which are more developed than the areas which are not developed at all. Same question which normally we used to ask about the issue of Western Cape sometimes. Yes, we agree. The places which are affected, yes. There are these places which are dominated by blacks in particular, South Africans in particular. It's very disturbing because we in Western Cape, if you talk about these areas to be developed, but we still, for an example, to quote one of the debate speech with where you talk about the sea of sheikhs, where do we develop exactly? And because the money is always concentrating in the places which are developed. Last one, if you may clarify us about the risk management. Now, time and again, why we ask the question of risk management. I don't mean this entity, but sometimes it's very disturbing because even some of the members, they will talk about what is corruption, while it's not founded. Maybe if you can indicate from us that whether do you have a risk management, whether there were cases of corruption, then how did you solve those cases? The last one, then, whether do you have the offices in the different provinces? Then over to you.
Because we're not going to have a second round, can I just one question? I just want to know, I forgot to ask the question, what happens to defaulters? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll start with the questions raised by Mr. Dawong. The first question was on rejection rate, whether do we have a record or numbers of people who are rejected. On monthly basis, our intermediary lenders submit management accounts, I mean, to us, Ralph. And in their submission, they will always include the percentage of loans that they received. I mean, they first include the total application that they received, and then also indicate the approval rate as well as the rejection rate. We have those numbers. Unfortunately, I do not have them with me, but in the office we do could study of the rejection rate of followers or applicants. And then the second question that you have just asked is on the defaulters, what happens to defaulters. Basically, we facilitate totally unsecured lending. So when people default, whether because of unfortunate economic circumstances which they find themselves, they've not lost their house, it's totally unsecured. But in terms of the consumer education that the intermediary will provide to them, is that they have to better report their difficulties to them, but they do not run the risk of losing their houses because they are defaulting. So basically nothing happens in terms of them losing their property, but they have to report so they can make an arrangement with the lender in terms of how they will actually pay back their loans, because it helps them as well not to default if they can, because they don't want to blemish their credit record, because it can always affect them adversely when they need loan for other things as well. So that is my answer. I think on the question of marketing raised by Mr. Dawong, as well as the issue of raised also by Mr. Jacobs about popularizing RALF, I think I will concede, because we have tried basically to market RALF using, for example, African languages, German registrations, as well as African languages print media, but that is not enough. He mentioned, for example, Zimbizo, that we have to purchase Zimbizo, have exhibitions. I know that during the Mr. Budget speech, for example, here in Parliament, we had a stand, but again, I would consider that we still need to do more to increase our visibility, especially in provinces where actually we're supposed to land. So I will take the comments and suggestions of the committee as they going forward to continue to try to do more in terms of increasing our visibility. I, responding to Mrs. Temba regarding research, I think I will take your advice and the suggestion, but we'll have to work with provinces. You know, I know that there are provinces who have actually invited us. You know, we are participating in the National Research Task Team. I think some of these issues, basically, we have a representative in that task team. Will have to be raised in that context, because we may see one, event or incident, but we have to raise awareness nationally so that we don't hear something of similar nature happening elsewhere. I will take that comment, and we have a member in the National Research Task Team. With regard to counselor training, I think the request was that we have to give the committee the program. The counselor training program is facilitated and run by the department through the capacity building. They invite us, and we take that opportunity so that we can present about RALF and also present about the role of intermodal housing finance in housing delivery. But I think I will liaise with the capacity building unit so that when they have the program ready, then they can share with the committee, because we are also invited there. Mr. Mlenzan, regarding the three municipalities, I think I will try to finish maybe the success of the committee with the information that we have. But at this point, the municipalities were themselves identified by the provincial Department of Human Settlement in the Eastern Cape. We did not select these municipalities as pilots, and I don't know the full basis of the identification, but from what we have done, the engagement that we have done with the municipalities, I can share that information with the response that we received when we actually engaged with them, and their interest basically to participate in the voucher program. So maybe I will link up with the secretariat so that maybe before you go to the province, then you have some information in terms of how we were received and the feedback that we received. Okay. And the question about criteria that is used to grant loans, I think just to clarify again, we as WACC are a wholesale finance company. We have intermediaries who access loan facilities or funds from us and then on lend to individual borrowers. That they do in terms of the National Credit Act. So when they look at the criteria and do the vetting, they look at the aspect of somebody who has who receives income. They also look at the level of indebtedness of the borrower. Because if they don't do a direct credit rating and then they grant a loan to somebody who's already highly indebted, then that would be reckless lending in terms of the NCAA. So they have the criteria to use, which is consistent with the National Credit Act, and have to comply with the National Credit Regulator regulations as well. In terms of the maximum limit, how much they can lend, what we have seen recently, we have seen, players in the industry, especially in the bigger lenders like Capitec, African Bank, increasing, the loan size up to 100, a thousand, But basically, again, the size of the loan that you can take will be informed by the results of the affordability test. I shared with you, we have taken 44,000 loan, 80,000 in some instances. That's a function again of how much loan can you afford, to take. Well, I agree with Babu Sibande that we have to go deep into rural areas. But like I indicated earlier, that our mandate was broadly defined to include areas on common land, rural towns, small towns. So when I indicate RDP, people who have received an RDP have taken a loan to extend, those are people in most instances who are within our mandate in terms of geographic definition. But what we also do, we track loans that go to rural areas using postal codes. And then annually, with the annual report, we indicate the number of loans that go to rural areas as well as the value of those loans. So that's the process that I said we are about to conclude now, just looking at the whole number of loans that were dispersed in the last financial year and the proportion that went to deep rural areas. But I think what I need to mention is that if you look at how we work, our business, we rely mainly on private sector players, the intermediary access funds from us. And as a result, we have not been engaging more with, for example, traditional leaders. And I accept that we need, again, to increase our visibility among traditional leaders so that they are aware about the program that RAN facilitates. They are aware that which intermediaries we work with in their provinces or their areas of jurisdiction. I will accept that we need to do more in that regard, and it relates, again, to the issue of visibility and marketing of RAN. Wab Sibande also asked a question on risk management. We have a risk management department in our organization. with regard to corruption, basically there's been no corruption reported within the institution or within RALF since I joined RALF in 2002. And I have no record also of corruption having happened within the organization since inception in 1996. Offices, we only have one office, which is the national office, where the housing, where the wholesale finance distribution is housed. And then in provinces, we have intermediaries who give us this national footprint. They basically land in all provinces, have offices in various provinces. I think the challenge for us is that the mandate we have, as RALF, has to go for development, for lending, for impact. Because if, for example, with the balance sheet that you have, were to open offices in provinces, it would entail that basically we use more money to support or to pay for infrastructure that we have in provinces and very little money for lending. So I think that's a current constraint. And also our business model, you know, enables us to reach impact, you know, better using the current intermediaries that we have, or using intermediary model that you're currently using. I know that Mr. Funnevald asked a question about excuse me. Yes. You asked about percentages in particular. I wanted to check the slide that we in this slide there. Percentage of impairments. Percentage impairment provision. In the current, or in the year that ended March 2011, we are about 19.3% provision for loans that may really go bad. But again, this is a function really of the state of the economy. You know, we know that people have lost jobs, their disposable income has been shrinking over time. So what we see from our intermediaries, they are really having some difficulties in terms of collections. So this is just the ratio of the economy. That is the percentage that we're using to indicate like that. I hope Honorable Chairperson, I covered all questions that were posed by the members of the committee. If I left any out, I apologize, but I would be glad if you can point this one to me so that I can respond to it as well. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, Honorable Tao. No, I'm going to say, honourable members, I think as I indicated, within the effort of time constraint, we'll allow any presentation to take place for 1 hour. But we, at any time, at any rate, we are still going maybe to request to have a full workshop if possible. Because the intention we wanted to have the 2 days as the workshop, but unfortunately, because of the piles and piles of work, we were unable to continue to have the presentation for 2 days. That's why we have congested our little time to this. By saying that, I think we would like to thank you for your presentation, but with a request that some of the things which you have indicated in our response, maybe to supply us with information as soon as possible, because as I indicated in my input earlier on that this exercise, the intention was to empower us when we go to recess, when we come back, when I mean, go to constituency offices as well as our visits to the provinces to get more information as much as possible. Nevertheless, I think we were accurate in terms of time. It's about 1 minute past half past. I'll request the third presentation from the National Housing Finance Corporation. And then, what I'll request from them. Sorry, through me. No other meeting, please, because there are 4 or 5 meetings at the best. I'll request the presentation from the National Housing Finance Corporation, but also to request you once more. There is tea outside. People can grab something and bring it inside, because I'm scared we have spent some cents about that thing. Anybody who has any interest can grab something and come back.
Thank you.